Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All righty, let's get this thing started on a Tuesday. After the show ends, after we sign off from Sound Off, you know, I decompress for a little bit, usually work out, usually get in a meal after that, and then fire up the TV, see what sports are on. And last night was no different. I went through that same routine, and around 7:30, I get a text message from Ian Guerin, who writes for the Sun News, does outstanding preps reporting for the Sun News and MyrtleBeachOnline.com. And he sent me a text message. He said, you know, I'm curious about what the response was from our audience about the Bryan Edwards news. And I thought, oh, man, news. Because I was sitting in this very room on Friday night during Mr. Sparky's Friday Night Wrap-Up, our high school football show, every 10 p.m. to 11:30, loosely, on Friday nights. And we had heard that Bryan Edwards, Conway's four-star wide receiver, had gone down with a non-contact leg injury. And usually when you hear non-contact injury, you feel way worse about it than when you hear contact injury, because that usually means something is torn. People that are 6'3", 215-pound freak show athletes typically don't fall over when no one pushes them and nothing is wrong with them. And I had monitored Brian's Twitter account to see if I could find any information. And on Saturday, he had tweeted that, hey, things are feeling better. I don't think this is serious, guys. And it had lost being forefront of my mind. It had lost in my mind being top of mind. And when I got that text from Ian that said, hey, how did people receive the Edwards news? I knew it wasn't, hey, the kid's 100% and he's ready to tear it up against Sumter. Unfortunately, I had that heart sinking in the chest feeling for a very nice kid and a very gifted kid. And come to find out, I read Ian's piece, he's torn cartilage in his knee and it's going to take him about 4 months to recover. Now, he remains committed to South Carolina. Steve Spurrier Jr. called him and they are still going to honor his scholarship. In fact, it would be really silly for any university to abandon a kid that has professional potential over a torn cartilage injury. It's better than a torn ACL. He's only going to be out for 4 months and should be able to join in South Carolina's spring practices because he still plans to early enroll with the South Carolina Gamecocks. But unfortunately, what that does mean that he will not be a part of a very promising 7-1 Conway team's run at a region championship and beyond in the playoffs. They're 4-0 in their region. They face Sumter this weekend. And that's going to really dictate whether or not they win their region championship. And you certainly want a full deck when you go up against the other undefeated team in the region. But it's unfortunate on so many levels because we love to see sporting stars go out on top at their respective level, right? Who hates seeing Peyton Manning struggle through a 7-touchdown, 10-interception season right now? Who hated seeing the ball coach go out 0-4 in the SEC? With high school and college athletes, it's a little different because they're exiting their current level of competition in their competitive prime, but that window to win at that level closes, right? How heartbreaking is it to see a senior in the NCAA tournament like a Frank Kaminsky unable to win in the championship game of last year's NCAA tournament, losing at the hands of Duke? You know that's his last shot going into the game. It's part of the urgency. It's part of the fun of the NCAA tournament. And when I heard that news about Bryan Edwards, that he would be unable to play the rest of his high school season, unable to play in the Shrine Bowl, unable to play in the U.S. Army game that has turned out to be kind of the McDonald's All-American game of football, which he was selected to, I just felt terrible for the kid. And for those that didn't get a chance to watch him play in high school, I kind of feel bad for you too, because when you see somebody that is clearly next level and it stands out on the football field, it is something that you truly remember. And he is 6'3", 215 pounds, faster than everybody on the field, good hands, he blocks well on running plays. And when he plays out of the slot and he catches that football across the middle of the field, there's just a certain elegance to his movement. It's not just that he's faster than everybody else. He's smooth, too. And you can see why a slew of SEC schools were tripping over themselves to offer him a scholarship. And you can see why when he plays on a field amongst other high school players, why he is going to the next level. Now, who knows, on Saturdays, up ahead, when he goes up against defensive backs from the University of Georgia and the University of Florida, whether he will stand out like that amongst his peers, whether or not he'll be able to play on Sundays. But we do know that he'll be able to play on Saturdays. It's just such a shame that as Conway, 2-9 back-to-back seasons, that Brian was a part of, and pretty much the only highlight from some of those seasons were the plays that he made. They finally turned their program around this year and have a legit shot to make a state playoff run. It just seems so unfair that he's unable to be a part of it. And on some level, that is sports. This was Chuck Jordan and my conversation with him in late August about Brian's ability to take over football games.
I've seen two guys take over a high school football game over the years, and one of them was Albert Hainsworth at Hartsville, and the other was A.J. Green at Somerville, and I saw it because I was on the other sideline. And, you know, I've seen Brian do that same type of thing, and it's very rare to see, and it certainly is not an indicator of future success, but it certainly is an indicator of the ability to do it if it presents itself.
Now, that's a man that's coached high school football for over 30 years and has seen a number of players both coaching with and coaching against that have played on Sundays. In fact, he has a wide receiver, Junior Hemingway, who's a professional receiver, and he chose to compare Brian Edwards instead to A.J. Green, a guy that he coached against. And I think that says a heck of a lot about his raw potential. And that's not to say that Conway has no shot at being Sumter this weekend or that they can't make a playoff run without him. Conway's quarterback, Junior Peyton Derrick, has 30 touchdowns to 3 interceptions this year. And that's not getting talked about enough. I mean, that kid is playing lights-out football and is probably the most improved football player in the Grand Strand this year. But, again, I mean, you hate to see a kid not be able to go out on top, not have that John Elway in the NFL exit, not have that Jordan shot over the Utah Jazz exit when we conveniently forget about the Wizards. But very few people in sports are able to have that kind of fairy tale ending. And it will be interesting to see what Conway can come up with without their absolute rock star wide receiver in the slot. And it should be known that this is not, you know, no one is really saying it's over for this kid. It's just beginning. I mean, he is 16 years old at that. So while he is torching these high school defensive backs and getting recruited, he is a year young for being a senior, and he should be ready to go by spring practice for South Carolina. I mentioned they're honoring his scholarship, as they would be fools not to. That was another thing I talked to. I was texting Ian about and said, man, why the heck wouldn't they honor his scholarship? They don't have a coaching staff for next season. I mean, they should build that kid a statue for staying committed. I mean, he's going in there blind. He doesn't know his receivers coach is going to be. He doesn't know his coordinator. He doesn't know his head coach. So we just hope for the best that his knee is able to heal and that whatever coaching staff is in place at South Carolina, that they're really in a position to help him succeed. And I don't really know anybody that's betting against him, so maybe it's kind of a silly position to say that I'm betting on him. But he is a very nice guy. He's a very humble guy. There doesn't seem to be any of the negative stereotypes associated with stardom with this kid whatsoever. This is also Chuck Jordan in a past conversation on this program saying how Brian had accidentally worn the wrong gear on a team bus ride for a game, and he earned the same 2-mile run that the rest of the guys did, and that really speaks to his humbleness.
Well, first of all, Brian is a very humble kid, and secondly, I treat him like everybody else. Matter of fact, before we went to South Brunswick yesterday, I told them what they needed to wear and get on the bus. And I had about 10 or 12 kids that didn't wear the appropriate attire. And Brian was one of them, so I snatched their butt off the bus, and they ran about 2 miles before we left to go on the trip. And so that's what Brian understands, is that he's going to be treated like everybody else. And he embraces that. He doesn't try to set himself apart and try to claim any kind of thing that he doesn't deserve. And you know, Brian academically has always paid the price in the classroom. And so, you know, he's a great kid. And that's what's going to separate him from a lot of people.
Ends his senior campaign with 53 catches, 969 yards, and 9 touchdowns. And that's with teams just absolutely keying in on him. So it's going to be up to Peyton Derrick, Jamaine Martin, and the rest of that Conway offense to make up for Brian's lost production and the lost threat on the football field, which oftentimes is more important than lost production. Because when you have a guy that gifted that's on the football field, he might not always be making that catch, but the defensive attention spent on him can help create a play. So Conway taking on Sumter this weekend. They head into that game 8-1. If it's your thing, send some prayers Brian Edwards' way. Help him heal that knee. And hopefully we'll be talking about him on the next level next year. And looking at South Carolina's wide receiver depth, I mean, they're playing walk-ons. I mean, there's no reason if that kid's knee heals the normal timetable they're saying it does and he's able to participate in spring practice, there's no reason to think he couldn't find the football field next year for South Carolina. And that's a big deal for freshmen, by the way, enrolling early. And that's a huge reason why Clemson's quarterback Deshaun Watson was able to be effective as a true freshman is, hey, he got to go through spring practice, so he wasn't really a true freshman. That was one thing that probably held Lorenzo Nunez back a little bit with South Carolina this year, as he was unable to graduate early because of his high school and some restrictions they had, so he couldn't get to South Carolina early enough to get in those crucial spring practices and pick up the offense. So we'll keep you guys updated if we hear anything more on Brian. But again, it's sad to see someone who is so gifted not be able to finish his high school season and exit on top like we like to see so many stars exit on top. But do know that he has a very, very bright future ahead of him. Now, last night in Monday Night Football, a lot like Sunday Night Football, officiating confusion over a very specific play. And unlike the Luke Kuechly pass interference or the Ted Ginn fumble interception, whatever it is, the officials decided to call it or not call it after replay, the losing team last night actually got hurt by a call against them on the field that didn't get overturned, and replay was not involved. We're going to get into a discussion about fairness and officiating and accountability coming up next on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
So last night in Monday Night Football, the Ravens end up losing 26-18. It is their sixth loss of the season. Who would have thought that the Ravens, who had a shot to put out New England in last year's AFC divisional playoffs, could have potentially been a second Super Bowl championship for Flacco and John Harbaugh. That was a hard-fought game. New England did some weird stuff in formations. That was that, you know, should they have to declare things, should they not have to declare things issue. And here they are just a year later, and they're 1-6, all six of their losses by one score or less. And last night is another example of that. And the play that people are going to talk about for today, tomorrow, for the rest of the season, I guess if you're a Ravens fan, you just have punted on this season, right? You're just like, man, I hope Steve Smith comes back for another year. Because I would hate to see Smitty go out like that. But it's not that he hasn't been productive, it's just his team hasn't been. Granted, that's a situation he was in the late DeLome, mid-Clawson, early Cam era, right? Productive seasons for Steve Smith, not followed by actual wins. But Chris Johnson, who, by the way, he was pretty much left for dead by the NFL. Arizona takes a flyer on him, and he's been an absolute beast this year. He's top five in the league in rushing right now. He ends up in the third quarter getting brought down by Brandon Williams. And it was one of those plays where the defensive player brings him down, and the ball carrier lands on top of the defensive player, and he stays there for a little while, but his knee nor his elbow hits the ground. Chris Johnson just pops up and starts sprinting at the end zone. Like, we've all seen that before. You know, all right, dude, the play's over, quit running, right? Like, anytime there's a borderline fumble, someone always sprints at 80 yards just in case the whistle didn't blow, they get a touchdown, or it gets held up. Like, I don't blame Chris Johnson for doing that. He did what was technically right on that play. I mean, if there's a chance that you can rip off a 62-yard run because everybody else fell asleep, then you're a fool if you don't try it. And he did that, and they never blew the whistle, and he kept on running, and a bunch of Ravens players were confused. John Harbaugh was confused. And the play ends up holding up, and it didn't get challenged because there was no knee or no elbow down, but Chris Johnson was basically sitting on top of a defender on the turf. The play had stopped. Like, you don't have to have an elbow or a knee down when you're running the football if all 11 people are pushing against you. It's called forward progress. You're considered down where your momentum stops. And that seems to be John Harbaugh's argument, that his forward progress had been stopped, and he's saying, as he said last night after the game, courtesy of NFL.com, he says, listen, if he was sitting up there on a tee, if he was sitting up on that defender's chest and one of my guys smashed him over the top, he'd be fined or suspended right now.
Yeah, I didn't get much information. The communication wasn't very good. I didn't get much information at all. I got no explanation on that whatsoever that was of any value. Forward progress was stopped. You know, if you hit him in that situation, then you're going to get fined and penalized. It's going to be a 15-yard penalty. It's going to be a fine. It's player safety. The play was 3 seconds it was stopped for. He had declared himself down. He was sitting there. So we shouldn't have hit him there. It would have been a dangerous play.
Oh, he's absolutely right. If Chris Johnson was wrapped up and on the ground and somebody on the Ravens just speared the heck out of him while he was sitting there like a baseball on a tee waiting to get smashed, there's no doubt there would have been an outcry from Gruden and Tirico in the booth about what a dirty play that was. There's no doubt that Goodell would be levying a fine today. And because of that one small loophole in the rule book that there's no knee and no elbow down, Chris Johnson just gets up and sprints 62 yards down the field. Now, Texter writes in, you can tell CJ2K is getting old because he got caught from behind. Well, tell that to John Harbaugh, who ended up losing points on that drive and ended up losing that game and dropping to 1-6 last night. And it's just, it's interesting that in football, we're doing this in baseball, we're doing this in basketball as well. We have an obsession with fairness in sports as an American culture. And we're trying to review everything. We're trying to stop the game more than ever and take the human subjective element out of it where possible, right? There's always a line where you can't cross in the NFL. It's, you know, we're not doing holding or pass interference on instant replay. With baseball, it's not doing balls and strikes just because it would take an inordinate amount of time. And at some point in time, you got to have rhythm and flow to a game. And heck, if you press slow motion on any NFL play, you're going to see holding and pass interference, right? Because just barely minimal hand fighting in real time when you slow it down looks like the cornerback is like slapping someone across the face. Like, it does look even more pronounced in slow motion. So I get that there are elements of this approach that aren't perfect. And 843-652-3776, interested in getting into a conversation on officiating right now. What is interesting, though, is in this billion-dollar sport that is the NFL, with as much as put into improving telecasts, broadcasters, paying coaches, paying players, I mean, this whole industry where there's a ton of money going down and there's a ton of scrutiny, that we know next to nothing about guys that really dictate the course of the game, and that's officials. And I know that the mark of a good official is not knowing he's there, right? He is basically allowing the game to be played in a fair way and not being a part of it. But the officiating crew that allows Chris Johnson to basically take advantage of a massive double standard in the rule book, on some level, shouldn't somebody really have to explain that play in a media setting where people can see that? And it's just an interesting concept, because I've been at Bank of America Stadium before in Charlotte, where the assembled media gets to pick one person to go talk to the officiating crew if there's a problem. Like, it's not every game where the media wants an explanation from officials. There has to be something kind of crazy, like last night. And everybody will just sit around and look, and they'll say, okay, hey, Steve Reed, you write for the AP and Charlie, you're a good, trustworthy guy. Go talk to the officials. But it's not like Ed Hockley or any of the NFL officials have to step up to a podium and say, hey, why did you guys call this that way? The same way that Joe Flacco has to stand up at the podium last night and someone says, hey, Joe, what did you see or didn't see when you threw that game-losing interception? And another really interesting element to this discussion to me, and I get that it's a tough job. It's not necessarily one of those jobs that you see on television. You're like, man, I wish I had that. I don't necessarily think officiating is that. But these guys are making around $200,000 a year, I think, is the last estimate that I saw looking at a couple of places online. And they're not full-time employees. They're independent contractors. And I don't know the dynamics of their union and how that works with the NFL. I mean, clearly it's not a bed of roses. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gone on strike 2 years ago and allowed the replacement refs to be out there for the first couple of games, including the infamous Fail Mary that my producer Brian is ducking his head in frustration as Russell Wilson beat his beloved Packers on a very, very questionable call. It just, the people that are in charge with oversight and enforcing fairness in sports aren't really openly accountable to having their processes be overseen by the public and fairness on their end. It's just kind of an interesting concept. I mean, maybe it's kind of like who polices the police, right? On some level, it is a little bit like that, but it seems like it would be a really easy fix for the NFL to make people who make certain calls available to the media, or to introduce a little bit of transparency about how they train officials or what repercussions are for bad calls. Because every once in a while you hear about a bad call and you think about Joyce, the Major League Baseball official who just blew a call at first base, and Galarraga does not get a perfect game for the Tigers. And it turns out that guy is one of the best officials or umpires in Major League Baseball over his entire career. He just slips up. He has a human moment like we all do in our careers, and that's what he's known for. And I don't think anybody's saying that guy should be fired for missing that call. It's just interesting that in this push to have everything reviewable, the people that are in charge with making sure there is fairness don't really seem to be open to having their actions reviewed. And Steve Smith, who is very entertaining, very fiery, very beloved by just about any fan base that he plays for, and many that he doesn't, afterwards said, you know, if the officials were on Yelp, he would not give them good reviews.
Well, you know, everybody has that out, Yelp, and you have reviews. 2 stars. That's why I would review this on my Yelp. It's 2 stars.
What if fans could vote on officials for, like, the Super Bowl and the Pro Bowl? No, that'd be an absolute disaster. That's how you end up with, like, 9 Royals starting in the All-Star game.
I think it just goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, is why are some plays challengeable and why are some not? Why can you challenge if a ball's tipped, but you can't challenge if the guy was down because of forward progress, or the play was stopped because of forward progress? Or, like, another play the Ravens got fleeced on, they had a lineman report as an eligible receiver to the ref. I guess the ref didn't see it or whatever reason, and they threw it to him and he caught it, and they call back for an eligible receiver. That's something as simple that you could go back and look at the thing, and the guy does the universal sign for I'm checking in as an eligible receiver, but I guess the official missed it and they get fleeced and stall on the drive and don't get any points.
Yeah, we're not expecting perfection out of officials. It's just, it is odd that such an important job is so anonymous, and what the repercussions are for succeeding or failing at that job are really not known by fans. And it is crazy to me that as important as their job is in million and billion dollar industries, that there does not really seem to be all that much regulation. They're independent contractors and they just come and go, right? The only ones that you know are the ones that make a big show out of how they do calls, like Ed Hockley, right? Gets in a scrap with Cam Newton about him being too young, allegedly, to get a certain call. Or people make fun of him because he looks like he flexes when he points out calls in front of the entire stadium. But it is just an interesting concept that they are so anonymous and not open to what some people would consider accountability. Others might say criticism. But just food for thought after another moment last night, and after kind of an officiating disaster that was Sunday Night Football as well. 843-652-3776 if you want to weigh in on that. Now, another fascinating conversation involving umpires happened today on Colin Cowherd's show on Fox Sports. And my producer, Brian Nelson, found this audio. And I shouldn't say I'm absolutely stunned, because Lenny Dykstra has not proven himself to be a top-notch human being. Former New York Met and either former or current inmate. I'm not sure on his current legal situation. But not a guy that's trustworthy by any means. But he actually told Colin Cowherd that he spent $500,000 in his playing career hiring private eyes to dig up personal dirt on umpires. And then he would remind them in at-bats that he knew their personal dirt.
This fear does a lot to a man. Hey, so did you cover last night? He called a strike. Oh, I don't think you heard me. Did you cover the spread last night? Next.
Man, how creepy is that dude's voice? He just sounds like somebody that should be in jail, right? Hey, did you cover last night?
That's like, I mean, like we said, not much surprises us anymore, but
finding out which officials have gambling debt
and saying it in the middle of that bat, just be like,
yeah, he said that it was not a coincidence that he led the league in walks. He paid for that.
And Coward asked him, do you think that's possible? He goes, no, I know.
Yeah, and he goes with the taking care of his family cliche. Hey, why did you flagrantly cheat and spend close to $1 million doing so in your playing career?
Hey, look, I had to do what I had to do to win and to support my family.
Now, I don't think anybody's going to take a look at that and say, you know what, he's just a great competitor. He really wanted to win. Do what it takes. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I mean, there are some ways of cheating that are somewhat amusing, right? And you just don't really care all that much about it. Like, you know, a pitcher, you know, licking his fingers and then throwing a baseball. You're like, okay, get over it. Did he really touch his hat, Bill? Michael Pineda having a little bit of pine tar on his neck. You're like, okay, dude, you weren't going to get away with that. Why are you doing that? There are some instances of cheating that you just shrug off, and there are others that's like, okay, paying private investigators to get gambling debt knowledge of umpires to then leverage them into getting ball calls instead of strike calls. And that's way over the top cheating on so, so many levels. And it's not like it's not crazy revelatory with this guy. It's not like Pete Rose gambling and you're like, okay, this is an all time great that's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. Everybody knew this guy was a scumbag, but it's crazy to think that he went to that depth and that length. And it really reminded me of, you know, I don't know, some of the Joker's tactics.
What exactly did you think they were going to do?
They got me early on. My mother's hospital bills.
Don't!
Sorry.
Live to fight another day, officer.
You can work the Dark Knight into your sports talk show. It's pretty nice.
I don't even understand his reasoning saying that it's to, like, support his family. Like, his contract, I'm pretty sure, is guaranteed anyways, or he's going to get paid something. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that guy's finances have been pretty shoddy for a long time. Yeah, well, I mean, I think his point is, not to introduce financial concepts like net present value, Brian, but if he spends $500K leveraging umpires and that increases his on base percentage, his next contract exceeds a $500,000 raise, then there's positive value in what he did.
That's some serious risk reward going on.
Yeah. Anyways, we're never going to be at the point where we love officiating and how it maintains games. There's just no way that we're ever going to be satisfied with it. And there's a point in time when you can't slow down and have every play reviewable. I think it would just help perception if some of these guys were available to the media and there was more known about their profession, how people get those jobs, and what kind of training they do in the off season. Like, I was reading a piece on Hockey League before the show started, and they said he, even though he's a lawyer, he spends 6 hours a day watching film on how to get certain calls right. And I mean, I'm not saying that these guys don't bust their butts. It just, for people that are crying foul about the way games are called, I think that would certainly go a long way if more was known about how it is they do their job.
I kind of disagree with the everything should be reviewable, at least for football. I mean, you only get 2 challenges a game, and you get penalized the timeout if you get it wrong. So it's like, if you want to challenge, did the water boy do something on the sideline and waste a challenge on doing something stupid, then go ahead and challenge it. You're going to lose your challenge. It's not going to slow the game down that much.
Right. But in some instances, like, you can't challenge pass interference. Like, that's just not a healthy way to view a football game. Unless the defensive back does a drop kick and all 9 officials missed it, there's no way that should be reviewable. And then when you allow that to be reviewable, I think that just opens up Pandora's box. You're slowing down the game too much. But you're right, football does have checks and balances as to the challenge flag and people's ability to slow down the game like that. 843-652-3776. Now, we just heard from John Harbaugh on his thoughts on officiating. What does Jim Harbaugh have to say about your kid's strategy on Halloween? We'll get into that next.
I'm ready.
Ha, ha, ha.
back on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. We're talking about the reviewability of sports, the oversight. A couple of our listeners reviewing my job performance today. Texter writes in, I couldn't disagree more. The first thing you're ever taught is to play until you hear the whistle. At no point do you see an official attempt to blow the whistle. Chris Johnson immediately puts his hand on the ground to get leverage and try to pull away from the defender. And great alert play by Chris Johnson. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Chris Johnson did what everybody should. He did what people are taught in the sport, and that is to play through the whistle, right? That cliche. Don't stop until you hear the whistle. What he did was correct. I just think that it is a bad... It puts the Ravens defenders in a lose-lose situation there. Because if they tee off on Chris Johnson while he's sitting up on that defender's chest, they're going to get fined, they're going to get criticized by the media, and they're going to incur a penalty. So there's nothing that the Ravens really could have done to stop him except for what, surround him until he stands up and tries to make a run. And so, I mean, hey, hats off to Chris Johnson for making the effort play. But I just happen
to think... Yeah, the defenders are doing what they're taught, not to hit a player that's down.
Right. I just happen to think that when a player is wrapped up and he is on the ground with a defender in that situation, when the play is paused like that, I think that that should always be considered forward progress. I understand the knee and elbow rule, but like in that situation, it's just a really hard thing to do for a defender to not tell when one of his teammates has a guy wrapped up, like, okay, this is where I come in super late and crush this guy. I think it's kind of an unfair thing to do for a defender to be put in that situation because the risk reward's not there. I mean, yeah, give up a 62-yard run to Chris Johnson or risk like giving the guy an awful concussion and being a national pariah. Another texter writes in, what does it say about our obsession with football that it's game one of the World Series and opening night in the NBA, and we're talking about a regular season game? Well, yeah, the World Series does begin tonight, and the NBA season begins tonight as well, but it has everything to do with the market we're in, and the NFL versus the NBA and the MLB on a market-to-market basis. And what I mean by that is, in this unique spot we're in Myrtle Beach, the closest professional sports teams that we have are the Panthers and Hornets. And believe me, I would love to talk to you guys about the prospects for this upcoming Hornets season, how P.J. Hairston is starting at shooting guard, and what Frank Kaminsky can do as a rookie, how they can survive without having Michael Kidd-Gilchrist for an entire season. But I don't get the feeling that that's what you guys want to hear. That's why I don't talk about it. And with Major League Baseball, it's really hit and miss. Like, when there is an issue, like a bat flip from the night before and everybody comes at it charged up, it's one of the most fun shows we've had about sportsmanship in baseball. Yeah, I'll totally talk Major League Baseball. But going into the World Series, if I'm like, this is why I think Kansas City is going to win in six games and this is what to watch out for, starting pitchers, that's not fantastic radio because I'm not a baseball writer. I'm not a former major league pitcher. Yeah, I can do my best to educate myself on who I think is going to win this series. I think the Mets because of pitching. But on top of that, you know, we talk about topics in sports radio, and there isn't a topic right now that's super hot about this World Series until something crazy happens. Then something crazy happens, and we discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense maybe if, like, Atlanta was in it. But
correct.
I mean, there might be a few people that like the Mets or a few people that like the Royals or maybe a few diehard baseball fans that care about the World Series. But for the most part, I don't think the majority of people really care about who's going into it, especially before any games have even been played.
Yeah, I think that in general, what I'm trying to do with the show is get away from preview radio, right? You know, it's the most cliche thing ever to turn on sports talk radio and hear somebody go on for 15 minutes about why they think the Panthers are going to win that weekend. And I've done that show before, man. I've done that show. But in general, when you stick to what's interesting, people like it more. That's just my thought. So,
and me and you both love basketball. We would talk that all day, but we did it last year during the playoffs, and no one really wanted to talk playoff basketball.
No. Playoff basketball, you know, NBA Finals, because of the cycle, no one is there. Right? Like nothing else is competing with the NBA Finals. People like talking about LeBron and Jordan's legacy and rings and stuff like that. I mean, people get fired up about that kind of thing. But when it's like, hey, it's opening night, did the Cavs overpay Tristan Thompson? Like, that's just not the market we're in. I mean, anyways, if you really are fired up about what we're talking about or what we're not talking about, let us know. I mean, we'll, this is as interactive a show as you're going to find. I mean, I'm not certain that Brian really turns down more than one person out of 100 that's calling up and wants to talk about something. I mean, if you just call up and you're like, I want to talk about the Mariners bullpen, I'm not going to let you on. There has to be some kind of regional relevancy. But if you're like, hey, why aren't you talking about this high school story that affects this area? I will take that very seriously. Anyways, 843-652-3776 is the number. Jim Harbaugh, and this always, just always entertains the heck out of me because I can't figure out how much of it is an excellently contrived media personality versus how much is actually legitimately this dude. And in one of the most Harbaugh moments ever, his suggestion for kids in trick-or-treating is to actually run between houses and switch costumes so as to maximize the candy they pull off on Halloween.
Yeah, they've been working on them. I've tried to advise them to get two costumes. To be go-getters. You can hit the neighborhood in one costume, and better to jog and to run from house to house than you can get more candy than anybody else. Then you can come home, make a quick change into a second costume.
Come on.
Go hit those same houses again.
That was from the Michigan TV station, WXYZ. Yeah, that's pretty much as Harbaugh as it gets. Overanalyzing Halloween, talking about effort. He wants his kids to hustle.
Hustling at all times.
Man, if only all of us could be Jim Harbaugh, like, or if there were just an army of Jim Harbaughs, like the clones in Star Wars, like if that was Jim Harbaugh, like I'm pretty sure there would be no cancer. I'm pretty sure there would be no HIV. I'm pretty sure. Well, actually, you know what? They would all probably fight each other, so maybe not. But if we could all just channel 10% of that man's relentless work ethic, you would. We would all be better at what it is we do, and we'd understand why that guy's been able to turn around Michigan overnight. And I can't play this clip enough on our show. You know, hey, if a girl asks you out one time, it's not the end of the world.
I called her, and multiple times, like nine times before she
You called her nine
call.
Times?
Yeah.
That's his wife.
I could tell she was a winner all the way.
He is married to somebody that he had to call nine times before she went on a date with him. I don't know anybody in the world. I don't know one person that would get turned out eight times and pick up the phone and call a ninth time. That's why.
Especially
that's why
these days, people are afraid to text like twice in a row, let alone call someone nine times.
Yeah. How soon is too soon to text after the first date? Do I need to wait 2 days? Nah, man. Harbaugh's on that phone. Harbaugh's talking to your girl. It's already over.
You'd be a great telemarketer.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I think is really interesting with the two professional football teams in the state of Texas right now, the two big stories, and we got into Greg Hardy a little bit yesterday, and obviously it's a story that we've talked about for a long time from when he was a Carolina Panther to now being a Dallas Cowboy. It's a really ugly look, and there are very few NFL teams that would actually put up with him doing what he's doing right now, and it shows that he really hasn't learned much from his situation. And my main takeaway yesterday, and we'll get to here in a second, Sam, is that you're not going to get someone to really have a life-changing, behavior-altering moment when you pay him $13 million to not work. So while Greg Hardy wasn't allowed to play football last year, the fact that he was immediately re-signed by the Cowboys and the fact that he made that much money last year, it's not shocking at all that he continues to basically behave like there is no ultimate authority. And I think just at some point in time, given his propensity for anger and violence, that he absolutely will do something that causes the NFL to take it out of the Cowboys' hands and just say, hey, this guy's done with football for a while, if not life. Like, I honestly, that is my prediction. I think that is where this story is going. And Jerry Jones is talking about giving him a contract extension. Meanwhile, Ryan Mallett, the backup quarterback for the Texans, and maybe this speaks to their overall value, he misses a plane flight, and he misses a meeting earlier in the year, and they cut him. Greg Hardy skips practice on Thursday and strikes a coach on the sideline in front of 80,000 people and national TV cameras, and the Jones family is talking about giving him a contract extension. That speaks a little bit to the differences in culture between the Texans and Cowboys, and a little bit more about the different values to an organization that Greg Hardy and Ryan Mallett offer at this point in time. But I'm just going to hold my follow-through up and just hold it there and say that he is going to do something over the next few years that causes the NFL to take him out of football. That's just my prediction. 843-652-3776. Sam is next up on Sound Off. What do you got for us, Sam?
Hey, man, I want to talk about those real go-getters. You know, those trick-or-treat bag snatchers.
Yep.
You know, they let all the little kids do all the legwork, and then they just go by and scoop up, maximize their ability to get candy at the per door. That's who I think are really good go. That's gonna be a real good businessman later in life.
Yeah, you watch what the kids that scoop up a lot of candy, and those are the kids he's gonna start recruiting. He's making those calls.
What is Harbaugh thinking? Like, I understand where he's at now. How did he get there? Like, at what point, like, what question led him to that? I don't know that part, the backstory.
Oh, the backstory on that interview on WXYZ in Detroit? Yeah, I didn't watch the entire interview. I mean, Sam, you've caught me being a little lazy. I saw the headline on USA Today's For the Win, and that's the only part of the interview that I watched. But I'm sure that the host asked him some question about, hey, what's your Halloween advice for kids? And he's probably like, be go-getters. Wear different costumes.
Probably like, hey, let's break down Halloween. So how can a kid maximize their ability to get candy?
Okay, well,
here we go.
Well, Sam, you bring up a very interesting point, and I am in this situation a lot of times when I interview coaches, whether it is Coach Chuck Jordan at Conway, it's Coach Mowgli at Coastal Carolina. You have to go into it with a different mindset because they're not going to talk to you about the game plan. Like if that TV reporter is like, hey, Jim, what did you try to most fix during the bye week? He's going to stare at him blankly and be like, finishing plays. And you're not illuminated by that answer because you know he's going to give it ahead of time. So I might occasionally ask a coach, Joe Moglia, how are you guys working on your run defense? And I most certainly will do that when I sit down and interview him on Wednesday for the tailgate show. But at the end of the day, I know that he's going to get back to some refrain about being a man. And if I can ask Coach Moglia what his thoughts are on the second season of True Detective, I'm going to get a more entertaining answer. So a lot of times when I interview coaches, I stay away from what it is they coach.
Oh, I think that's all. I think some of the best interviews, I mean, I listen to a lot of sports talk radio. The best interviews are when they talk nothing about what they actually went on to talk about, you know, to begin with. And some of the best interviewers do just that. I mean, Jim Brown was talking to Michael Bennett yesterday about what he had for lunch. And he happened to have, you know, a couple other Seattle Seahawks in the car. And it basically kind of went on like, what are you guys doing? Where are you going? And, you know, what was for lunch? I thought it was really entertaining just because, you know, it wasn't the, you know, yeah, we're going to get back to football. Yeah, we're grinding and so on and so forth. That was kind of refreshing to hear things like that. And, you know, I mean, hey, maybe that's just great interviewers up there in Detroit. So that's pretty awesome. But a little serious take before I get off the line. We
sure.
Let's go. On the Greg Hardy thing, which we all know kind of how this works. Your leash is really as long as your production value is. There's a reason why no one's called no one's called the running back from the Ravens, because obviously his talent level is dropped and no one's willing to take that risk for someone who has, you know, little to no productive value. Now, when you have somebody who's in the peak of their prime, as in Greg Hardy, you're going to tend to get a little bit more of a leash. And I commend the Panthers for cutting ties with him very early on and not letting that cloud their judgment on the moral character of somebody. And I thought that was very good show, a very good tailing for Jared Richardson and Dave Gettleman all together. So I'll get your opinion on that. I'll let you go.
Yeah, appreciate it. Raider Dave, we're going to get to you in a second. To some of Sam's points there, yeah, he is one of the top five pass rushers in all of football right now, and the Cowboys are probably the most lenient organization against people off the field and having kind of destructive behavior on the field, as we saw. So it's a perfect storm of somebody not really facing any repercussions from their organization, and I think that that's one of the reasons why I think this is going to continue to go into a tailspin for Greg Hardy and the Cowboys. And I also think that with the Panthers, they have, even though they've been to the playoffs the last 2 years, they've done a good job of cleaning out their locker room. And I think their culture right now and the way they are playing and the way they play for their coach, as hard as they play, I think that that is evident to a certain degree that Dave Gettleman and Ron Rivera, the way they understand their locker room, has turned into wins and losses. It's really hard argument to make that a team's better off not having Greg Hardy, but you know what also isn't a hard argument to make? 6-0. 843-652-3776. Raider Dave is on the line. What's up, Dave?
Hey, I just wanted to call in and kind of give a different perspective on the ref's call.
Sure.
For that running play last night. I did watch it, and I saw the replays. And what comes to my mind is how many times at the goal line does a back get stopped up for that same amount of time that he was held there and bounce over to the side and end up getting in. You know, the amount of time that he was actually held sitting on the dude's chest was less than 2 seconds. It wasn't long enough that I would consider forward progress to be stopped long enough to stop the play. Now, I understand the safety argument of, yeah, that nobody could have tackled him sitting there without being fined, things like that. I've never seen that stop anybody from making a hit in the NFL before. But I think that they got the call right. I don't think he was stopped long enough to actually consider it an end of the play. But I also am a guy that thought they got the Seattle-Green Bay call right as well. So. That's all I got for you today. Have a great day.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Raider Dave. It's just such a tough 50-50 call, and maybe the fact that we're talking about it the next day means that, hey, we shouldn't be that mad about that call, right? Because if, you know, if everybody was on one side of it, if nobody was texting and calling saying that they got it right, they got it wrong, maybe we can read into that more. Yeah, there are certain instances. Like on the goal line, they let that forward progress thing go until someone basically dies or gets into the end zone, right? Like if someone is running on 3rd and 6 and they're not near the first down marker and it's a running play and there's forward progress, they blow that thing early. But if it's in the goal line, they let that play go. And I think that Harbaugh's point, and just to, you know, kind of touch on some other things, I mean, yeah, he just said if one of my guys hit Chris Johnson when he was effectively on a tee like that, he would have gotten fined. And so it just puts them in a tough position. And one of the texters that wrote in earlier just said that it's up to the defensive player to stop his tackle when he hears the whistle, basically, and that there was no whistle, that he should have still hit Chris Johnson. He should have followed through on that play. It's just, you know, it's tough, man. It just, you're going to get fined. You're going to be suspended, maybe. Or I don't know. I mean, would a guy get suspended if he just smashed Chris Johnson when it looked like he was down already? Probably not, but he would get fined, and he would lose yards, and he would be called out for getting a dirty play. And what percentage of it was guys just falling asleep and Chris Johnson being the smartest guy on the field in that one particular play? Probably has something to do with it, a little bit. A little bit, but...
And the other play on top of it that I was talking about earlier, and they always seem to be on the reverse end. They had the situation with the Patriots last year where they had the defensive line shift, which deemed legal last year, but then they changed the rule during the offseason. So I'm sure it's just all bundled together and frustrating for the Ravens as a whole.
Yeah. I don't know. The more, this is like the tax code, you guys. The more you try and add and eliminate loopholes, just the crazier everything gets, right? The more, well, it's forward progress gets instituted after 1.5 seconds of no progress outside of the goal line, and the goal line is 3. I mean, yeah, there's no way that we could effectively do this, but interesting points made by Raider Dave nonetheless. And we can all agree that Chris Johnson was smart on that play, that he did nothing wrong. It's just whether or not it was a fair decision to put the Ravens defense into, which, you know, I think not, but I respect people who say that they should have played through the whistle. All right, coming up next on Sound Off, This Is America. A quarterback on the West Coast should be able to do something in this country. We'll get into that next. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. So UCLA quarterback Josh Rosen, 5-star guy, starting as a true freshman, playing really good football right now, by the way. TMZ did a report that he had a hot tub in his dorm room, and it's like an inflatable hot tub, and there's a picture of him and a girl in the inflatable hot tub. I mean, what's the point of being UCLA's quarterback if you can't have an inflatable hot tub in your room, right? The trappings of celebrity. As long as a booster didn't pay for that, that young man should be able to have his inflatable hot tub and fill it with whoever he wants to at whatever point in the day. But after TMZ ruins everybody's fun, they posted the picture of him in that ridiculous hot tub. The UCLA media director, Mr. Ricardo Vasquez, has reported that the hot tub has been removed from his room, end of quote. Yeah, didn't comply with dorm regulations. I mean, I thought we lived in a free country, Brian. I thought this was America. What's the point of being a star quarterback if you can't enjoy the trappings of it?
Especially for something so simple.
Is it a fire hazard? It's made out of water. I'd like to see that argument. Anyways, let's do a little call today.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America, Sound Off Call of the Day.
Raider Dave bringing up the goal line.
And what comes to my mind is how many times at the goal line does a bat get stopped up for that same amount of time that he was held there and bounce over to the side and end up getting in?
How would you be if your favorite team was on the goal line and guy was trying to bounce it outside and get into the end zone and the refs whistled it dead and they're like, nope, forward progress. He's down at the one. He just didn't get in.
Almost as mad as when they give the game to the Seahawks when they didn't catch the ball.
So that's an interesting point. My producer, Brian Nelson, still a little salty about the Fail Mary. I think that if we all learn a lesson on today's show, no matter how hard we try, we can't make officiating perfect. No matter how hard we try, no matter how much we want, we're always going to want more. We get something, we get instant replay. We want more things to be reviewable. We want more replay. Yet we want a faster game. So maybe the gist of it is that being an official, maybe it's not an easy thing to do. Maybe, is that where we are? This is like a cheesy 80s sitcom where there's a lesson at the end of it, the dad's patting his son on the back. Now, son, being an official is a tough job. And maybe you don't really want to be one. All right, Phil Kornblut, Kevin McCreary coming up next on Sports Talk. Plenty of press conference audio from Sean Elliott and Dabo Sweeney. I'm sure they will hit that next on 100.3 The Team.